Hey, family, my name is Mark, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I certainly have been blessed with the gift of recovery. And I don't say that just to sound slick or say something I heard somebody else say. But I know I'm blessed. Now, when you know something. You know, I know that I'm blessed. And the reason why I know I'm blessed, and the reason why I know this recovery thing is a gift, is because I did everything to be here, and I did everything not to be here. And I think of all the guys that I, and ladies that I did stuff with, you know, dudes that I was real close with, you know what I mean? That we was like two peas in a pod. And some of them guys sit in places where they saying, man, I wish I coulda, woulda, shoulda. They ain't gonna never get a chance to sit in a seat like this in a free society. Some of them are dead. And they died, you know, real violent and ugly deaths, you know what I mean, and hurt a lot of people and, you know, disappointed a lot of people. And I was on that same path, you know what I mean? And I can't explain how come it's me that has a seat in Narcotics Anonymous. But when I really get still and I really think about all of the stuff and all of the times and all of the things and all of my mindsets and all of my little schemes and all that crap that I was doing, and yet God saw fit to land me in a seat in Narcotics Anonymous. And I was one of the guys that said, man, I don't need no program. A program? That's some sucker stuff. That's something that's soft. It's not for me. You know, I just like getting high. But what I know today is that I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop balling. My clean date is November 7, 2001. And, you know, when my predecessor asked me to do this meeting, I was a little hapsy. Man, I ain't never relapsed. You know. But what I thought about is that I've certainly relapsed in other areas as it relates to addiction. In fact, I've been chronic. In that department, and if any of you all are like me, you may be considering or have a reservation right now about something I said I wasn't going to do, and I'm going to do it anyway, and I'll deal with the consequences of that thing later. But right now, this little plan I got working in the back of my mind seemed like it's going to be all right. And every time I did that, I got tore out the frame. And but it's something about familiar pain. You know, it's something about the comfort zone of familiar pain. I don't know if nobody can relate to what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pain that you kind of used to, them pains. So as opposed to venturing out and going over here where it appears to be healthy and reasonably safe, I'll go back to that familiar pain. Because I know how that's going to hurt. But what I don't know is the damage that's being done. And this thing, this illness is progressive. And thank God I was able to get out of the corners that I backed myself into clean. Because God knows I've truly backed myself into some corners with my behavior. I started using and, you know, I ain't going to do no whole drug log. But when I found heroin, that was like mother's milk to me. And I couldn't stop oiling. And I said when I get like them dudes with the swole up arms and abscesses and ain't no skin on different body parts and when they got to go in and they had to go in their pulse, when they got to do all, I'm gonna stop that. I ain't gonna shoot no more dope. If I got to go on my neck, hey, I'm the same addict that couldn't wait to get to my hitter. Man, can you see that? And in the end, I was in a hole in my pulse with a, and I'm not trying to get nobody high, but I'm just telling my story. I was in a hole in my pulse with a blue-haired needle pushing it, trying to get it to catch. you know, because I'd abused myself in that area so much that it was a hole, and I was trying to get it to catch, and it caught, and I got pink blood. But of course, I'm a fast addict, so I as soon as I see the red, I'm pushing it, and it was pink blood. And what I didn't know was that a section of my intestine had already collapsed in my body. So I wasn't having bowel movements. And, of course, my solution was drink meth and shoot dope to feel better. And that's the solution that I operated under. And prior to the what caused the intestinal collapse was the fact that I had been near fatally stabbed 7 times earlier in the early 90s, in 93. Took me a whole year to recover from that. To show the disease of addiction was working in me. After recovering from that process, that healing process, I went right back to the same street, to the same guy's house I left that night and said, man, I'll be back in an hour. And he said, man, something don't seem right. I said, oh, go ahead, man. You know. But that shows me that the next time don't have to be like the last time. Because every time before when I made that move, it was all right. But I didn't know that that time it was for my life. And I got hit 7 times and rushed to the hospital and all that stuff and all the trauma and, you know, vena cava cut, collapsed lung, no spleen, a lot of intestinal abdominal damage. So they're going to have to amputate my leg, did a process on my leg to save my leg. A whole year of medical treatment to get back to this form. And as soon as I got on my 2 feet, and I had an experience with God, you couldn't tell me that God wasn't real. Because I couldn't direct nair one of them surgeons as to how to operate on me. I had 5 surgeries. I couldn't direct nair one of them to tell them, look, this is what you need to do, doctor. You know, I'm the patient. They the doctor. I couldn't direct the doctor. And they did what they had to do by the grace of God. And as soon as I got on my feet, man, I went right back. And that's not to mention the case that I had in court. I'm facing a life sentence in court. I'm just talking about God's hand on me before I even had the common sense to realize that something was working in my life to get me to the seat in Narcotics Anonymous. And I went right back, and I started that madness all over again. The trial went. I went to trial, got found not guilty. Never in my life have I ever gone to trial. I always took a cop because I know I ain't have a leg to stand on, you know. And I'm not no hustler. I was just in the way. I'm just trying to support a dope habit. But I'm getting ready to get a life sentence over some narcotics. And they found me not guilty. Once again, God giving me a pass, you know. And I'm saying God because that's who he is to me. But I continued that madness. And when my intestine collapsed, my thinking was like this. Well, if I'm having bowel movements, I'm ill. If I'm not having bowel movements, it's because the meth got me constipated. So I'm all twisted in my thinking. And the doctor, when they took me, they rushed me back to Washington Hospital Center, the greatest hospital in the world as far as I'm concerned. The doctor said, son, this is what's about to happen. He said, the bowel is literally about to explode in your body. And if it explodes, you're going to die. And he told me what would happen. He said, this is what we'll do. He said, we're going to do this procedure, and the worst thing that can happen is that you'll have a bag for the rest of your life. If your intestine don't, you know, if the swelling doesn't go down and everything, you'll have a bag. If it goes down, you have a bag for a little while, and then the bag will be removed. And I'd had a bag before. I'd had a bag. I'd had a diaper. I'd had a tube in my ass. I'd had all that, you know. And I continued to want to shoot dope. So, you know, that's the kind of addict I am. And he said, son, this is what he gave, explained the procedure. He said, but, you know, if you keep living the way you're living, you're going to die anyway. And a light went on. And what happened is that I had seen a buddy of mine. I'm standing up on a strip. He pulls up. He had been clean 5 years. In fact, the last time we were together, we were on a caper together. I got away and he got caught. But for real, he got away and I was still caught. And that's how it really happened. And but what happened is he had to go get his paper signed. You know what I mean? And for 5 years, he did exactly what y'all told him to do, change people, places, and things. And he stopped messing with me. I was one of the people he stopped messing with. And I had an attitude, you know, because I felt like, man, this dirty individual. You know what I mean? Lying. I know I was calling him all kind of cruddy names. And when he saw me, pulled up in a brand new truck. You're talking about the power of attraction. Pulled up in a brand new truck, and he had this glow. It was my man. Looking like a million. Have you ever seen your friend really just looking? My friend was looking good. And it wasn't the glow that we had when we would come home from Lawton. It was not that kind, because I had one of them before. You know what I mean? But I could never keep mine. You know, mine would always fade to black, and I mean ashy black, you know. I'd be the little, you know what I mean? My collar be all stretched out, you know what I mean? I'd be trying to keep my fronts up and looking crazy as I don't know what, talking about I'm all right. And, you know, he looked really good. He said, man, look, I'm going to tell you something. He said, it's better on this side. And I'm looking at him. And this is the same individual I done sat in all joints with our pants down around our ankles, with needles in our groins, thinking this is the best we ever lived. You know, because when I did it that way, I didn't have to worry about asking nobody for no help. I'm like, you ain't like asking nobody for no help either. And he said, man, it's better on this side. He said, but I can't come over there and get you. You got to want to come over here. And I'm looking at him. He said, man, he got all my numbers. He said, when you're ready, call me. And I was laying in that hospital bed, because that's how my surrender came. It came with me flat on my back. You know, and that's a hard surrender. And even clean, my surrenders have had to be flat on my back. But I'm getting better. You know, I he said, man, when you get on your feet, I'm gonna take you somewhere. And he took me to my first meeting, and I heard this. I heard the message. It was just perfect time. It was God's timing that any addict could stop using, lose the desire, and find a new way to live. And see, I couldn't stop thinking about narcotics. Okay, I done stopped using, so how now do I stop thinking about it? How do I stop thinking? How does that compulsion leave? How do I get rid of that? Because I couldn't change my mind. Once my mind got locked on the fact, man, you got to do this and you got to do that because you're going to get over there to see them, that's the route I went. And, you know, what I've learned is that in this recovery process is that things don't really, the things have changed. But that thinking, that mentality, is still, you're going to get her, you're going to go over there, and you're going to do this. And my relapses have been in the way of relationships. I did what y'all said. I got a sponsor. I got a home group, best home group in the entire world, men's rep. You know, shout out to my men's rep. And I go to meetings on a regular basis. I try to help someone with no strings attached. You know, but it's something about Mark. You know, it's something about Mark that there's this thing inside of me that calls me to do things that I ain't got no business doing. Things that think about things that I ain't got no business thinking about. And y'all said we more alike than different. So I have to continue. And the biggest lesson that I've learned since being clean is how to raise my hand and ask for help. I remember sitting in a meeting about maybe having about 45 days clean. And I said, I might get ill. Because I'm used to getting ill. And I raised my hand and I said, you know, I'm feeling like I might get ill. And I got all this, I got all this stuff. And really what I was doing, I didn't know it at the time, but I was dispelling my reservation. You know, and the reservation was, you know, I'm holding on to something, reserving the right and opportunity to go use again. I'm creating, I'm making space to go back to some familiar pain. You know, I got a reservation. And I had all this, I had works, I had cookers, I had bags. And what I do is on Sundays, see, I have to scrape my bags. I don't know if anybody knows anything about that. I had to scrape my bags in order to get my legs so I can go out and, you know, put a lick down or something, so before I could really get on. And I had all that paraphernalia in my closet. And me and the guy that's now my sponsor went there and cleaned out the closet, even found a bag of dope. Would have never found it if I'd have been looking for it. But we found a bag, you know, and he said, "Mate, put all the stuff in the bag." He said, "Now, don't go back in that dumpster and get it." You know. And it was like, you know, something lifted. You know, I was scared to death. And I'm going to tell you, I was scared because I didn't know how I was going to live clean. I had depended on what drugs did for me for so long. Now I don't have the drugs no more. So what do I do with all these feelings? I'm a super sensitive guy. I look at Forrest Gump and cry. You know, I can feel the passion rising up in me as I begin to talk about certain things. You know, so I know the sensitivity is there. But what do I do with all these emotions? You know, and you know, the first thing that came back to me after I got clean was my sex drive. You know, and you know, I did this. You know, I got in relationships. At least that's what I called them. You know, and I got humiliated. You know, I'm the addict that you know, you say it's over. I said it's over. We beefing, you know, I'm mad, she calling me all kind of names, I'm calling her, you know, we going like that, and it's over. And then at about 12 o'clock, my mind take control, and I get a vision of the good times, you know, and I tell myself, boy, you know, it really wasn't that bad. All you got to do is do this, and everything will be all right. And I will go right, get back on the phone, and go right back. And before the wound could heal, I ripped the scab right back off. You know, and but not only was I doing harm to that individual, I was doing harm to me. And I never knew that I was the most important person. You know, and because I didn't know my real value, I palmed myself off any old kind of way. And the only thing that I knew that worked, the only thing that really I thought that had value was that piece there. So I'm going to give you what I thought had value. And you know, it's amazing how my God will begin to kick the props from up around me. You know, he'll just start kicking stuff away. And I went back and, you know, we did that for a while and then I meet somebody. You know, I'm just telling my story. And she wasn't in recovery. And I had not even told, you know, that's another thing. You know, when you meet somebody that's not in recovery, at first when I was new, I used to rush. And I was so excited. I'm in recovery. I got 30 days clean. You know, I'm smiling, I'm excited, I'm happy, you know what I mean? And I'm still happy and excited, but I mean, I was, man, I couldn't wait to tell somebody. Like, they really cared about, you know, that process. And man, I went back and, you know, we did that back and forth. And this woman, she was a nice lady, wasn't in recovery. I hadn't even told her about, and a whole mess erupted. And in the humiliation of it all, I got stole. You know, and I got stole in front of everybody. And it wasn't by a guy, it was by a woman. And I felt this big. You ever seen the Flintstones? When Gazoo shrunk Fred? And Fred driving, you know, and the steering wheel looked like it's humongous. And I don't even want to look at the woman, you know what I mean? Because I feel like she probably said, this idiot, honey, just please get me home, you know. But I couldn't strike back, you know, but it brought me to a point of decision. And you know, what I really saw was I saw the pain that I inflicted. And I felt it. You know, before I didn't really care. I'd do stuff, man, and it really... My conscience never bothered me. You know, it didn't really affect me like that. I'm like, man, psh, you know, she got hers, I got mine, you know, whatever. But I began to develop a conscience, and that thing, man, that thing bothered me, man. And then what really got me is that here I am expecting God, as good as he is to me. You know, I just finished sharing you how close, you know, how fine that line is with life and death. As good as he is to me, you know, here I am being that kind of being reckless like that. And then I'm expecting him to do all this stuff. You know, all this stuff, but yet I'm foul. You know, I'm real foul. And so that's been the struggle and so commitment. You know, growing up, Mark. Growing up and learning how to handle responsibility, because the literature says that, you know, my inability to handle my personal responsibility, I was creating my own problems. You know, I wanna look the part. I wanna sound the part. But when it comes to putting the left foot in front of the right foot, I don't wanna do that work. That's when the little boys show up. You know. So when you talk about commitment, I'm like, you know. Well, I'm looking for an out. But, you know, in recovery, we get by, but we never get away. You know, what goes around comes around. And it don't feel good when it's me on the hot seat. It don't feel good when it's me curled up. It don't feel good when it's me looking for an answer and can't get none. It don't look good when love is staring me right in the face and my heart is too hard to even recognize it. See, that don't feel good. And I'm the addict that has missed a whole lot of opportunities. Because I got my eyes wide open, but I ain't seeing nothing. Got my ears open, but I ain't hearing nothing. Always going in the wrong way, 100 miles an hour. You know. So for an addict like me, for God to say, hold up, stop. Stop. Just stop. And that's what it does. I mean, he just stops me. Stop. And that's what has to happen. You gotta stop using. Mark, you gotta stop. You gotta put down the hype. You gotta stop. I don't care if it's a two-legged hype. Cause them the best kind. And, you know, I'm, you know, I like it a particular way. So when it's that way, I'm, you know, whew. Man. Two. But what I'm doing is I'm backing myself into a corner, and I believe that my recovery is about relationships, you know, and they can be healthy relationships, or they can be toxic. And God knows I done had enough toxic stuff. See, I'm already toxic coming in. You know what I mean? I got a lot of stuff that I'm trying to rid myself of already. But then when I connect with somebody, I'm adding on. So it's best for me when y'all say, Mark, hear her story. Maybe I done gone clean off the subject of relapse and recovery. I don't know. But Mark, hear her story. This is not Narcotics Anonymous. This program is not an intellectual program. You cannot intellectualize your way through this process. It's a spiritual program, Mark. You know, you got to hear her story. Because when I connect with somebody, I'm not only giving, I'm receiving. And some of that stuff I'm receiving don't wash off. So why is it that when I'm with one, I'm thinking about what the other one? Why can't I get that out of my head? That's kind of like a relapse. I can't stop. I told you I couldn't stop thinking about that. Why can't I stop thinking about? Why don't I know what to do with this person who's brand spanking new? Why do I got to bring what was over here over here? Why do I got to do that? Why I got to identify, you know, with that crazy stuff? And I want to get better, man. I want to live better. You know, I want my mind to be, you know, I don't know if anybody can relate to this. You know how sometimes your mind just be cluttered with a whole lot of stuff? And relationships do that to me, man. I'd be like tripping. And I don't show it because I look like I'm cool. You know what I mean? I look like I'm in control. You know, like I got it, you know, like I've jived together or something. But that's a lie. I'm told. Don't let the smooth taste fool you. Good God Almighty. You know. But just to relieve that, you know, to be relieved in my mind of some of that insanity, man. That insanity is a mug. Whoo! Good God Almighty. So if you're sitting in a chair in Narcotics Anonymous, you really have been blessed, because this is the place where I can come and I can get it off. I'm thankful for my sponsor, you know, and sponsorship is the lifeblood of this program, because over the years, our relationship has changed. And because of the things that I've experienced, and the things that I've gone through, and the things that we've discussed, the integrity, you know, that piece right there. Because y'all said, get somebody, Mark, that you can tell all your stuff to. No matter how funky it is, no matter how foul it is, no matter how crazy it may sound, or how to, get somebody that you can tell all that stuff to, no matter what. And, you know, I have men like that in my life that I do. And God, the integrity. Now, I know everybody don't have it. But if you don't have it, find some people with it. Because I've got some people in my life that have some integrity, and I've shared things with them that have not been repeated. And I'm talking about precious stuff. In trying to relieve myself of the frustration of the insanity that goes on in my mind, and I'm thankful for this program, and with my sponsor, you know, like I said, the relationship has changed, so I depend on him in a different way, and it really is a two-way street, and it's just good, man. It really is. Everything that happens in recovery has not been good in and of itself, but it's all working together for the good. You know, everything that I've been through, y'all said, don't use no matter what, you know, and it gets better. And I'm experiencing that, because on the other side of it, every time I surrender, it's like God go a little bit deeper. he get into some spots that before I wasn't willing to let him into. You know, he goes a little bit deeper. And my recovery, and I get my foundation becomes a little bit stronger. You know, in my home group, we have a common theme that's called Men Under Construction. And, you know, a construction site ain't no pretty place. You know, it look like stuff is everywhere. You know, but what they told me in that group is that, Mark, the deeper the hole, the taller the building. So you got to be willing to dig deep. And sometimes I'm not so willing to go deep because it hurts. You know what I mean? It hurts. But there's a way in this process that I'm not saying it's not painless, but there's hope. Because I've seen men, my predecessors before me, go through stuff. Heart-wrenching stuff. Stuff that I used to hear shared and say, man, how in the world am I going to deal with that without a shot of dope? How would I feel if that happened? You know. And they say, rumble, young man, rumble. And what happens is, with the tools that I'm given, that's exactly what I've learned to do. I've learned to rumble and not use no matter what. And the challenge for me is the relationship piece. Because I'm still on the fence. You know, I get what I think I want, but then I'm like this here, you know, and I don't know if nobody else can relate to that. I believe the women have a better lock on the inability not to do that than I do as a man. But I, you know, it's just amazing, man. And that's the area in which I'm trying to get better, you know. And it's not easy. It's not easy. My mother has been married now for like 21 years, and she's just beginning to experience, over the last maybe say year or so, verbal abuse from her husband. And I asked, well, didn't you see any of this? Because that has been one of these situations where really my the humility, the boundary, you know, trying to keep some balance, all that stuff is being trapped. My emotions be off the hook. Because that's my mother. And it's just like in school, you know, you can't say nothing about my mother. You say your mother, then we got to fight. And here I'm a grown man now, and you know, with the thought of this man saying something about my mother or talking to my mother in a disrespectful way has me completely on edge. And I go back and forth with it. But I asked her, I said, well, don't you, you know, and I got to be all right with her choices. And that's the part of really the acceptance of, man, I got to accept what my mother has chosen. And the truth of the matter is that I've always had to accept what she's chosen because I'm her son. But as in recovery, I've learned to see her not only as a mother, but as a woman. So I got to respect what her choices are. And I got to be there for her regardless. And, but it's hard. It hurts. That's a hurtful situation. But I asked her, I said, well, didn't you see these things? And she said, yeah, but I ignored it. I felt like it would change. I felt like it wasn't really that bad. So I'm saying if it took all them years, you know, and these kind of things. I mean, there's no perfect relationship. And I'm somehow or another looking for some kind of perfection. And it just don't exist. Because I guess the minute I enter into it, then the perfection goes out the window. But anyway, I'm so thankful, man, that I've that I've found this program, or that it found me, really. Because had I not been in Narcotics Anonymous, it's certain that jails, institutions, and death would have been my plight. So I know I got to go, but I like to go clean. You know, I like my life to be, to count for something. You know, I want the quality of my life to be better than what it was. You know, because I was living a real low life. You know, and I was paying a high price. And so it's a blessing, like I said in the beginning. And that's why I say it's a blessing, because it easily could have been another way. And I want to thank the D.C. area for asking me to share. Thank the committee members and so forth. Thank my co-speaker. Thanks for letting me share.